This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome back to Twin Peaks Investing. This is part two of Twin Peaks Investing number 57. As you were listening earlier, we've got two fantastic guests, John Newman and Phil Oakley, both formerly of Investors Chronicle, but now on their new venture, Investability. John, I wanted to ask you about some of the areas you're going to cover. And we just, when we had the break there, you were talking about property and REITs. I just wanted to just share a bit more on that topic for me, please.
Yeah, absolutely. So Phil and I have sort of divvied up the FTSE sectors. And as I mentioned earlier, I'll be looking at tech and pharma. And I also realised when I looked at our partnership agreement, which we have, that I'll be covering sort of resources as well, oil, gas, mining, and renewables. But property is something that really interests me. You know, it's a massive part of the UK economy. You know, whether it's residential or industrial or retail or office, and it's all moving so fast at the moment. There's so many different things going on. You know, we've seen some, you know, big REITs, you know, all but collapse because of changes in the property in the sort of retail market, and we've seen others really benefiting from that, like logistics REITs, for example, Tritax Big Box being the most obvious example, Seagrove being another. And you have to, as we were discussing, Peter, you have to pay a huge premium for those now. So again, you know, as Phil mentioned, yeah, I want to look at those and say, should you be paying that premium? What risks are you perhaps underpricing when paying a premium like that for those things? Is it a one way? Is retail a one way street? You know, will these things just keep getting bigger? Are the big sort of, you know, Intip is dead, but are the big sort of, you know, retail landlords, you know, is there anything left in them? And more generally beyond that, I'm kind of interested in, as I say, just the sort of general property market. I think a lot of the country's wealth is tied up in property. A lot of it's financial, you know, what would you call it? You know, well-being. A lot of how people, the financial feel-good of the nation is really underpinned by house prices. I do worry sometimes that it's quite a fragile foundation for an economy. So I'll be spending a bit of time looking at that.
Okay, Doug. I mean, you mentioned Tritox Big Box, and I used to hold that, and, you know, I thought it got a bit too rich and sold out too early, you know, clearly. It's sitting now at 25% premium or there or thereabouts, John, from the last NAV date of 30th of June, which was 188.71, and it's sitting at 232 at the minute. That's a big premium there, mate. It's not the biggest, obviously, but it's still quite large for essentially a box, you know.
Yeah, it's punchy. But then, you know, you walk down the high street, walk down any high street in this country, and, you know, it's grim. I had the pleasure of walking down Lowestoft High Street the other week, and, you know, it's pretty empty. You know, the retail market has changed. First of all, it's sort of kind of moved out to retail parks, but some of those are empty now as well. So, you know, you can see why people buy into that story, and why something like Tritax is potentially the way to play it if you don't want to buy the kind of, you know, e-retailers themselves. But what could go wrong? And that's the question that I would like to ask and answer.
I mean, it's an interesting company. It's done what it's done. It's in a very, very strong niche. And that niche has outperformed other sectors in the property, you know, sector. We talked about compounding earlier, and Pete mentioned compounding his portfolio. It's looking at 3-year annualized, John. 21% compounding it over 3 years, you know, so just over three and a bit years, and you've doubled your portfolio sitting in Tritox Big Box. You know what I mean? That's pretty awesome, you know, for the shareholders that have been sitting quietly in that particular stock.
Absolutely.
And then you've got its sister company eBox doing a similar thing, just starting to grab attention of other people.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. You know, I'm not saying it's a bad company, but
no, I'm not. I'm just saying I think the premium's rich, but it could get even richer as it did when I sold it.
Yeah. But no one ever made a loss by selling too early.
That's true.
Do you know, it's funny because I sort of learned something a few years ago. I bought Primary Health Property, PHP, probably about, 4 or 5 years ago. And I remember buying it on a premium, say 15% above forecast NAV, yeah? And I remember really umming and ahhing and thinking, should I do it, shouldn't I do it, whatever. And what attracted me was the fact that PHP was so incredibly boring because it invests in, doctors' surgeries, GP surgery sort of thing, clinical health centers. So it was incredibly boring, but obviously it had very reliable and secure income. And I wanted it for my income portfolio, which is like a little boring portfolio I've got. And I bought that some years ago, totally in trepidation, thinking I've really screwed this up with the massive premium. And it's been incredible. I don't know what it's done, but it's gone up massively. And it's still on a very high premium to its NAV. And I'm still picking up a nice dividend. I just think, well, why sell it,
Absolutely. Absolutely. But again, behind that, there is a great story that but the UK GP surgeries are, they're in need of modernisation. The NHS needs to take pressure out of hospitals, so move that sort of certain types of treatment out into a super surgery, the kind of thing that PHP provides. It's a great story. But the NHS is a complex beast. The government is complex. Politics is complex. It doesn't mean, because it's been good, doesn't mean it will last forever, so therefore should you pay the premium that's being asked today? And the answer might be yes, but it's again, it goes back to exactly what Phil and I were talking about, which is just understand where the risks are before you make that decision.
John, can I ask you about a stock?
I don't know if I can answer it.
Well, no, I just wanted sort of your take on it. I was reading today about Secure Income REIT. Do you call it a REIT or a right? I've no idea.
REITs.
Okay. Secure Income REIT, which I think is SIR. And I read that it's Nick Leslaw, who is the guy who's in London Metric Property. And he's I think he's quite a sort of veteran property investor or whatever. I believe he's involved in it and his mate's involved in it. And it's one of those where they've invested in things like Premier Inn, and some others. I can't remember what the other one is. Oh, Merlin Entertainment's therein, and some other stuff. Well, what's your sense on that one? Because it looked to me like it could be quite good value. I don't hold it or anything, but I just sort of wasn't sure. What do you reckon?
Oh, they're ground rent investors, aren't they? So they're basically taking the ground rents off
I don't think it was that one. I think Secure Income REIT is sort of like pretty normal. And, it owns travel lodges or Premier Inns or something, and it takes the money. But obviously it suffered because of the pandemic.
Yeah, I mean, these are smart guys. The property industry is full of smart guys. They know how to make money. Whether that then translates into shareholders making money is a different question altogether. Off the top of my head,
that's fine, mate.
I'm not sure. It's one for the list. I'll put it up the top when I start writing. The property industry is full of smart people. It's full of smart people, but they can't stop. They don't control the economy. And property, like anything, is not a one-way street. Although, right now it kind of seems like it is. Things concerned.
The interesting thing is, and I'm not sure if you're aware of this yet, Pete, but their half-year results come out on Friday. We'll find out, as John says, how exactly how smart they are. They provide long-term rental income with upwards-only inflation protection and includes private hospitals, psychiatric hospitals, visitors' attractions, including Alton Towers, Thorpe Park, theme parks in the UK, travel lodge hotels located throughout the England, Scotland, Wales, Manchester Arena and UK's indoor, and a brewery at Chiswell Street, the catered event space in the City of London, and high street pubs. So they've got a vast array of properties there, including some in Germany. So, yeah, nice diversity there. Diversification, should I say.
I'll think, take a proper look at it.
I think the thing that got me about what I was reading was there was, I think the CEO, who isn't Nick Leslaw, but he's his mate, was saying that he didn't feel like the market was really attributing the right value to SIR, and that if they didn't see that value come out, they would break the company up or whatever. So I thought that was quite interesting to read.
I mean, a lot of CEOs threatening these days, mate, about this, that and the other. My company's not valued well enough, blah, 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 blah. And then somebody comes along and makes them a bid and suddenly, you know, it's 10% higher and that they're happy with that. It's like, come on, you know.
I find it quite strange that you know, when management obsess over a share price, because the market decides the share price. And, you know, all they should focus on is running a business. Running the business for the benefit of those shareholders, you know, and you know, if they do that well, then the share price rise will follow. So I do find it quite strange. Although of course we know that a lot of direct remuneration is linked to a share price.
The share price.
Yeah. But
John, the thing is, and we goes back to what you and Phil were speaking about earlier. You know, the better value and the PE ratios and all the rest of it. For the US equivalent of a UK is 20, 30, 40% more. So they're looking at the PE of a stock that they think is inferior to them, but the valuation is huge for the US counterpart or even the European counterpart to the UK one. And they're going, well, why is that company over there, you know, three times the size of ours when they've got less revenue than us?
Mm.
So it's an ongoing argument, I think.
The US has always had a premium. The US market has always traded at a premium.
Why? Explain to me why, though.
I couldn't tell you. Bill, that is.
I think the companies listed on there are a lot better.
I think it's faster growth as well, isn't it?
That's what I mean. You know, you've got, you know, you compare, you know, the S&P 500 with, you know, with the, you know, the FTSE 100. I know it's not exactly fair comparison, but you know, how many global giants have you got in the FTSE 100? How many global giants have you got in the S&P 500? It's just no contest.
It is no contest. I was reading something not so long ago. I think it might have been a couple of weeks back regarding one of the things I'd said about Apple being such and such of the S&P. And if you looked at the S&P and went right down to the bottom of the S&P 500, some of the ones at the very bottom of the S&P 500. Would be in the top 10, top 15 of what the FTSE of 100 is.
You see,
there'd only be a handful of our stocks that would actually get in the S&P 500.
Pete, I mean, you know, America, you know, for all, you know, you can have a view on America as a country, good and bad. What is indisputable that it is, you know, it is set up. It is very business friendly. Some would say too business friendly, but it is a very dynamic, can-do economy. It has fantastic, you know, assets, intellectual property, research and development, innovation. That we, you know, we have pockets of that here. There are some excellent companies, but they're just not big enough. And America has got the not only that excellence, but it's got it. It's bigger, and there's more of them. I mean, you can argue about the price that investors put on the shares, which is always very topical, but even more so now. But that is what I think, in very simple terms, explains it.
Well, Buffett said it last year, didn't he? You know, don't bet against America. It's a crazy but brilliant economy. I mean, and the other thing as well is that, you know, private investors are much more active in the markets out there than they are here. It's part of their DNA.
Yeah, I have to agree with you there, John. I mean, the interesting thing, as I thought you were going to touch on there as well, is that they're now looking for value because they see their own markets quite rich, and the venture capitalists and the hedge funds and so on and so forth are just, you know, beating a path to the UK to buy up quite a lot of our companies. And as you've touched on a little earlier, John, a lot of it's property related, or in some sort of instance, you know, especially like the likes of Morrison's and people muting now, Sainsbury's as well, and Marks and Spencer's have had a pop because, you know, everyone's looking at property.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the UK has been too cheap. There have been times recently when the UK market was really trading a massive discount to other major markets. We saw this coming. Private equity have been always very active in the UK, for better or worse. Taking stuff private, flipping it back onto the market. I mean, there is something a bit unsavoury how the system works.
Yes.
So how do you feel about valuations now then in the UK, John? Do you think there is still value? I know it's hard to do it when you do it collectively, but would you say there probably could be more value in the FTSE 100? And perhaps in certain bits of the FTSE 250, or do you think a lot of that valuation gap has started to close?
I must admit, it's been a while since I really paid much attention to sort of relative valuations. Phil's probably better position to answer that right at this moment in time.
I think high quality businesses worldwide are very richly priced, if not overpriced. I think there are some quite interesting companies within the UK market. They may not be great in terms of growth, but you can see how there may be like a sort of corporate angle to it, to shake it up and, you know, realize some hidden value in there. I'm talking about companies like, you know, BT come to mind, you know, you've got a relatively new chief executive in there, chairman, you've got issues going on, you've got an activist shareholder in there who clearly sees something and wants to make something happen, I think. And, you know, the thing about private equity, of course, is that, you know, they can do the deals that you and I cannot do. You know, they can play around with finances and financial engineering and asset disposals and do it with lots of borrowed money and can make a lot of money if it goes right. You and I can't do that. And that's not to say that, you know, every stock in the FTSE 100 looks cheap to private equity target, but I do think that there are businesses in there that, given the sort of right care and attention and a bit of a fair wind, could be interesting. I think Sage is we talked about Sage earlier, and, you know, Sage has completely missed the boat in terms of, you know, capitalizing on cloud computing, but actually something more basic than that, just making its product friendly to customers, which is what Intuit QuickBooks and Xero has done really well. And it's one of the reasons why Sage is lacking. But I always wondered whether, you know, almost like a sort of tech, I wonder if a company like Microsoft could come along and look at something like Sage. I mean, Microsoft has got a customer relationship management business, and whether they want to get into, you know, accounting software, that kind of stuff. But Sage is a little bit in that sort of CRM space as well. And I think that the business has been seriously underperforming. It is incredibly profitable. I think the only problem with something like Microsoft coming along with it is it doesn't really do much for Microsoft, because Microsoft is so big in relative size to Sage. It's whether it would see that. But that's the sort of company that you could see being shaken up. So, yes, I think there are bits in the market. The problem with this, and this is the problem with value investing in general, for want of a better phrase, is that you can buy stuff because it looks really cheap and, you know, you can make money when you get an event or a repricing. The problem is what happens when that business is repriced? Because often these businesses are lowly valued because they don't, you know, they're in very challenging industries with not a lot of growth.
We're talking cigar bar investing here, Phil. It's
well, yeah, kind of, but all sort of like, you know, super tanker type investing. You know, how do you move it? These are big lumbering companies that, you know, are doing an okay job, but they're not exciting equity investors because people don't see materially higher profits from them in the years ahead, and hence they get ignored. I mean, that's where opportunities perhaps spring up.
This is what slightly worries me about the UK market. Yeah, some very, very large sort of miners, oil and gas companies on there, Shell, BP, most obviously. You know, their future is uncertain, and they've got a lot of work to do to adapt themselves for that future, however it looks. You know, climate change, whether you are fully bought into the whole ESG agenda or not, you know, climate change is a real risk, and these companies are right in the firing line of it, and they've got an incredible amount of work to do to turn themselves around, to be part of a future that is less reliant on the things that they've made huge amounts of money for themselves and for shareholders doing. So yeah, I think that the value in the UK is value because it is challenging, like Bill says.
Yeah, you make a good point there about the ESG side of it, especially with the likes of BP and Royal Dutch Shell and all the different legislation that's coming out that's making them liable for everything to do with everything that they do, you know, and that's going to cost an absolute fortune. And then decommissioning is going to cost them a fortune. So, you know, people are in those sort of stocks for dividends, compounded dividends, but the returns simply aren't there unless they innovate and get themselves into other spaces. And they're going to have to try something new. I just see them as quite, you know, stayed in their approach. And they've spent a lot on investing in new technologies, but I don't often see much of that technology coming back out again. You know, other than the charging, you know, charge masters and stuff like that going on. I don't see a lot of innovation going on their part. And the electric vehicles are going to be coming far and fast towards them going forward. So they've got to start innovating, otherwise they're out of the game, I think.
Absolutely. Seeing a lot more Teslas on the road.
We're not going to go.
Oh, heaven forbid.
This is a quick hello to you, our valued Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener. Whatever channel you're listening to, please make sure to subscribe and you'll always be the first to get the new episodes. Thank you for your continued support.
Yeah. I wanted to go back to what Phil was saying about BT, because obviously I own BT, so that's just my disclosure there. And I bought that some time ago, quite cheap. And now they've got activism going on there. And I purchased them last August at 97 pence, and they've been higher than 2 quid, and they've dropped back down again. But part of the reasons why I bought BT was because precisely what John and Phil were saying was because they're overlooked, that they've got the growth is so slow and blah, 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 blah. But as an interest, I'm looking at intrinsic value all of the time now regarding my stocks. And the fact was, you've got sitting there Openreach, which is the gem, and people are saying, oh, it's worth 20 billion, it's worth 24 billion, it's worth 25 billion. And then you've got BT at the time was sitting there around, I think it was sub 10 million, and 10 billion, sorry, when I was purchasing it. I was going, that can't be right. At some point, someone's going to have to release value regarding Openreach, you know, and whether, you know, Patrick Drahi investing 2 billion is the catalyst for it, I don't know. But for me, there's always hidden value in most of the FTSE 350 stocks that are out there. And if people spend a bit more time, you know, via your site, Investability and other places, researching what actually is underlying in these companies, I still think there's some bargains to be had. And this is why we've got private equity companies almost on a weekly basis going, we'll have that. If you don't want to value it well, we'll have that. We'll take it apart. And as you say, John, we'll flip it and come back in 3 years and we'll actually float it next time on the NASDAQ and even get a premium for it, you know, with a couple of cheap add-ons.
I think you're right about Openreach. It is fantastic. And, you know, we've had lots of dealings with them here recently, and they are a really, 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 really good business. There were some big strategic mistakes at BT. I think they overinvested in content, which, you know, is a a very, very, very competitive space. You know, you've seen Amazon coming into to football now, for example, which obviously BT had had gone hell for leather into. But you know, the problem you have with some of these old big British companies is their pensions. Yeah, they've been around for so long that they are. I've heard, you know, it's like British Airways or whatever you want to call it now. It's a, you know, it's a pension scheme with an airline attached to it. And I think the same is true.
An airline that isn't flying.
And that as well. But the same is true of BT. You know, the you would think that that separation would to create value would have happened. But I wonder that if the pension is the real sticking point there.
I think it probably is the pension is a sticking point, mate. But yeah, they'll have to sort that out at some point. Most definitely. But yeah, I mean, I think Phil touched on Sage, and I think they're just. I saw for the first time actually, Phil. I think it was probably early this week when I was dropping off from another, you know, 18-hour day. An advert for the first time I've seen an advert for Sage, and their, you know, new technology pushing forward for accounting. It's like I've been seeing Xero ads for the past probably 3 or 4 years, and that's the first advert I saw for Sage, for instance, marketing their new tech.
Yeah,
why it takes so long?
They've just been too slow in this, and you know, as John mentioned at the start, you know, we're setting up a business. We've got an accountancy package now for us, and we've got QuickBooks, and it's a breeze, absolute breeze to use. I've used Sage in the past, and it was horrible. I know things have moved on. Then I found it very complicated to use, and I appreciate the product is probably a lot better now. But I just don't think they've marketed themselves. I think they've got a very sticky customer base from years and years gone by. This is the thing about software. They have very high sort of switching costs. People don't want to learn a new system. So once they're sticking with it, once someone's got, you know, Sage, they'll probably stick with the Sage. They won't move everything across to QuickBooks. But, you know, a new business starting up, and, you know, a lot of people set up their own businesses. You've got a lot of sole traders who need to start getting to grips with a bit of bookkeeping to, you know, for the first time in their lives. They're going to go with something that's sold to them, that's easy and simple to use. And in my opinion, Sage has just not been good enough and fast enough at communicating that to customers. And you can see it. You can see it in its financial results. You know, what's essentially been happening at Sage is that you've had the old sort of CD-ROM that used to go in and desktop license has just been swapped for a subscription and based in the cloud. And actually the underlying growth of the business has not really been that great. But underneath it, it's, you know, you look at this business, it's one of those profitable businesses out there. You know, software businesses are incredibly profitable. If you get it right and you get the growth, then, you know, investors can make a lot of money in software companies and have done so. I just wonder though, what is going to turn this company around?
I don't know the answer to that, mate. But I think they're slowly getting there. I mean, the bizarre thing is, and I'm not quick at doing calcs on Australian dollar, but you've got Xero, which people could have a research of. The ticker symbol is XRO. On the ASX, I'm not sure which other markets that they're in. Obviously, it's a New Zealand. I think that's Australia. A New Zealand domiciled public tech company listed on the Australian Stock Exchange. 22.7 billion, I think it's Australian dollars. Sage is worth 7+ billion pounds. You could invariably get the David and Goliath situation coming on from the previous Goliath being Sage, almost being purchased by Xero, could you not, Phil, going forward, if that would ever be allowed to happen?
Yeah, I mean, but you see, if you look at the, I'm just looking at the predicted growth of these companies now, and you look at Intuit, which is listed on the American market, which is the owner of QuickBooks. I know they've got other products as well. They've got, you know, a product called TurboTax, which does a lot of people use to do their tax filings over there. But, you know, the next 3 years, Intuit is expected to grow 16%, 12%, 13.5% top line. sage is going to grow at like 4-5% if it's lucky. So, you know, I know there's a few other things going on there with the products, but sage is losing market share and is expected to lose market share. And it's like, how do you turn that around? Once you get in a company like that that is being eaten by, more agile, more innovative companies, you know, you can look at Sage and you can go and crunch your numbers and you can look at the profit margins and the returns and stuff. But this is what I say, you've got to dig beneath the numbers and actually try and understand what the business is and its competitive positioning. And you can quickly go off a company when you see stuff like this.
Mm. I mean, I sort of say when you're looking, if you look at someone like Sage and say, okay, it's got to be an acquisition target at some point, you got to ask the question, well, what value is someone going to get from it? So if Xero bought it or Intuit bought it, why would they want Sage's technology? Why would they want it? They've got their own. The only thing they want is the customers, and they can get
want absolutely, John. They want the customer. They want the book. They want the book.
Yeah,
but the problem with that is, yeah, they want the customers, but the customers are all used to using Sage. You're not going to go, oh, by the way, we're from Intuit or we're from Xero. We've just bought Sage, and we're gonna turn you all into Xero users now.
Absolutely. What an acquirer doesn't want to do is look after, particularly in technology, is to look after multiple platforms. It's expensive.
Yes, that's true. That's true.
So I think between us, we've perhaps worked it out on air why Sage might not get
Nobody wants Sage. Yeah. Oh, dear. So, guys, I'm conscious we've had you on it here for a little while. I want you to go back to investability. And you were touching on, you know, what is it that you guys are doing? And I want you to make sure that you give a little recap as to what you're doing and what the plans are going forward. You've already touched on most of the stuff that you're doing, but a recap of what's going on and what your plans are for the future. And where people can find you, obviously, give us a shout out and the website name and da 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 da.
Yeah, shall I go for it, Phil?
Yeah, you go for it. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, you know, in summary, just going back to what we spoke about earlier, it's just old fashioned analysis. It's the kind of proper in depth research that we think private investors really need. And done it in a sort of free thinking, plain speaking style, which I think, you know, listeners of our podcast will know that's the way we sort of the way we roll. You can find us at www, I think you do that still, I can never work it out, .invest-ability.co.uk. And actually we're live now with our sort of holding page. And if you want to sign up, we have a free report that Phil has put together that we'll send out to anyone who joins our mailing list before we launch, hopefully next week.
Excellent.
Cool. Do you want to say what that free report is, or is it a case of people should find out once they've signed up?
Phil, I'll leave that. You've written it. You can make that call.
Well, they're going to find out what it is when they go to the webpage. So it is on a very interesting company. Probably one of the a company that I enjoy studying, analysing, and learning about, and. It's about Games Workshop.
Ah, I see.
G-A-W.
Okay.
Cool. Sorry?
Cool. G-A-W.
G-A-W, yeah.
So John, Phil, will you guys be having a social media, Twitter handle, blah, 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 for investability? You're going to put everything out via your individual names?
We do. I can't remember what it is, Phil. What is it?
We can add that into the blurb that we put out with the written article, guys, if you want to.
Yeah, absolutely.
What are your Twitter handles, guys?
So at John Human.
That's John Human.
I'm at Phil J. Oakley, and our Twitter handle is at invest_ability.
Cool.
Just to clarify on John's, it's John Human, so that's JohnHuman, is that right?
That's correct. I hope that's
Thanks,
correct.
Mate.
Yeah, that is correct. Okay. Chaps, is there anything else you want to add before we wave you guys goodbye and look forward to seeing your material going forward? And also, I've got to ask this question for all the people that have been sitting here listening to this and want to know, when will the first John and Phil podcast be out? Ish. Approximate.
How about the end of next week? Should we commit to it, Bill? End of next week?
End of next week.
Okie dokie. Okie dokie.
So we're recording.
That's something for some people to look forward to then.
Yeah. And Peters, you'll have to both come on at some point.
Oh, I'd love to.
That would be very kind of you. Very, very kind of you guys. We can always bring you guys down to earth again. You know what I mean? When you're soaring. Right. Yeah. Okay.
It's been great. Thank you very much for having us on. It's been a pleasure.
No, thank you for gracing us with your presence, guys. Really, really, absolutely honoured to have you both on. You know, we hold you guys in such high regard, so it's an absolute pleasure to be able to get you guys on our little podcast. Really, really pleased, and thank you very much.
No problem. Yes, guys. Pleasure.
Thank you. All right. See you later.
Thank you very much. Wow. Okay. Thank you, John. Thank you, Phil. For all you people that have been waiting, that was John Newman and Phil Oakley. They're going to have a brand new investing website for you called Investability, which we'll be pushing and plugging and helping to get you guys listening to, reading from, because we really value their insights. And we're all about learning and education on this podcast. So we want to bring you the best people that are out there. Hence the reason why we got John and Phil on this call tonight, and we're running in part two. I think Pete and I have been on this call with John on and off and Phil on and off for an hour and 45 minutes. So we're going to get back to our general sort of conversation now. I think first up, I think we need to let Pete share with us the fantastic wheelie bash that he held.
Oh yeah.
In the pub, which where else would he have it? Last weekend, Pete, do you want to tell us about that, mate?
Oh yeah, no, mate. It was really, really enjoyable, and I think everyone who attended had a really good time. I think we had about, if you count me as well, I think we had about 56 people. So I'm pretty pleased with that. It's the biggest wheelie bash we've ever done. The excellent Steve Holdsworth has done loads of photos for us. I'm gonna hopefully sometime this week I'm going to get those photos put on my website so people can see what was going on and who was there and stuff. But no, it was a really, really good event, and it's always the same with the weather, isn't it? I mean, we were fortunate because the weather stayed dry, but it was a little bit chilly at times. But you know, we managed to stay outside in the garden all day, which was fantastic. And myself and a few diehards, there were probably about sort of like 15 of us or something, stayed on till very late. Well, you know, I think it's about 10:30 when landlord Phil had to chuck us out. Thanks to everyone for coming. And it was brilliant, the response, and it's just so nice to meet old friends that I've known for years. You know, since doing Wheelie Dealer and stuff. And also to meet loads of new people. And I just want to do a quick shout out to three people, which are Raj, Dr. Raj, his wife Rama, and his son Nav, who it was great to see them. They're like a sort of investing family, which was like, wow, that's amazing. And they're all into investing. And they'd driven down from Solihull or somewhere like that, or Birmingham somewhere. And they'd driven down, and the traffic was really bad, so they didn't actually stay at the bash that long, and then had to go back. But you know, they said they had a great time, and it was fantastic to meet them. And they've been reading my stuff and reading my tweets and listening to the podcast for years. Thanks to them for coming down. Well, thanks to everyone who attended. It's brilliant.
Excellent. I mean, the thing for me, Pete, about the bash that you put together each year is the variety of people, new investors, experienced investors, that come along and just share insights about the variety of different things that they're into, whether it be funds or whether it be individual stocks, large or small. So I think that's why it works so well, you know.
Yeah, I think the thing that sort of it goes in its favor as well is that it is absolutely no stress. So it really is a case of, you know, if you want to come along, you just rock up, it's you know, there's no charge for entry or something. You have to like buy your food if you want, you buy your beer, whatever. It's a pub that's fairly local to me that I go to a lot. We get on very well with the landlord, and you know, it's just basic pub grub. There's places to park. It's not that far from Windsor. It's quite near Legoland, but it's out in the sticks. It's like really out in the country. And it's funny how the number of people who say to me, oh, I love the pub, because it's just like in the middle of nowhere, like a country pub, and it's got this massive, lovely garden. You hear all the birds and all that kind of thing. And it's just a really nice environment. And then the fact that, you know, there is no stress. People come when they want, they go when they want. You know, there is literally no stress. And I think people just mix brilliantly. And I mean, it's disappointing for me in that I struggled to get around to talk to everyone. And I was aware that there was a few new people that I didn't really spend much time with. And that's sort of frustrating. And in a way, it sort of told me that 60, which is the sort of limit that Landlord Phil allows us, 60 is the right kind of number. And what I'm thinking for next year is we're actually going to do two wheelie bashes, as I've mentioned before, which is basically going to be, one's going to be in May, June, one's going to be in September. And I think by doing that and keeping it to a reasonable size, it's one of those things, if it got too big, it'd be a load of rubbish.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the difficulties regarding those sort of things, I think. But the beauty of it is that obviously if some people don't get around to spending a lot of time with you, they get the time to speak to other people that they've got to know via Twitter. So they're having conversations in little groups and clusters. So it enables them to learn a bit more from each other.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what happened, yeah. You know. So, I mean, it's on every year I do it. Like I say, next year there's going to be two of them. Get in touch with me. Well, I'll announce once I've got the date for May, for the May June one. I'll announce what the date is, and people can say, yeah, they want to come to that, or they can say, I'll come to the September one, and we'll take it from there. And yeah, you know, everyone's invited. There's no one's banned or any nonsense like that. And we have loads of ladies and girls and young people and old people, and you know, all sorts of people turn up, all different experiences. We have traders, we have long-term investors, we have everything, you know. It's just a really great bunch of people.
Cool.
Whether you are an experienced or new investor, you know how valuable it is to conduct portfolio enhancing analysis and to have easy access to data that will give you the edge. As a Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener, you can access an exceptional offer via ShareePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. This special Twin Peaks offer is available to new subscribers only, and you can subscribe using the promo code TWINPEAKS. The incredible and exclusive offer means that monthly subscribers will get their second month free, and annual subscribers will get their 13th month free. Sign up and subscribe to ShareePad today using the Twin Peaks promo code, and you can save up to £69. Visit sharescope.co.uk/sharepad for further details and subscribe to the investing and trading analysis and data you need.
Right, Pete. Should we talk about some stocks, mate?
Yeah.
I'm going to throw one in here, which I looked at yesterday, and it goes back to our conversations about DIY building and all the rest of it, yeah?
Yeah.
FTSE 250, which is where I'm in the FTSE 350 camp at the minute, trying to buy stuff up in that space. And I think, I'm not sure if you hold it, so please let us know if you do. But okay. It's house builder Vistry. Yeah.
Oh, I've got that, VTY.
Oh, dear. All right, I didn't know that. But let me just talk about it anyway. You can throw in what you want to say. But they came out with results yesterday, yeah? And they were one of the top performers in the FTSE 250. Basically, they reported first half revenues and earnings that were significantly ahead, which is what you want to hear for a company of that sort of size. And for half year revenues, they had 1.25 billion, Pete. But the crazy thing is, given what happened regarding lockdown last year and all the other stuff that was going on, to June, obviously, because we're looking for, what was it, from almost February to March. February is when we started lockdown properly last year, you know, yeah. February, March last year. So their revenues got, you know, crimped. 91% increase on the first half of last year. Yeah, and a modest increase to the first half of 2019. So that's pretty, really, pretty good, mate, really, considering. And they increased their margins to 21.8% from 14.1%. So that's not bad, considering what they're doing, you know?
Yeah, well, I'm looking at SharePad as we're talking, and I've got my glasses off because my eyesight's so rubbish, I can't see anything these days. Anyway, I'm looking on my little tablet of SharePad, and it's for Vistory, it's got forecast PE 9.5, falling to 8.2, and it's got forecast dividend yield 4.8%, rising to 5.9. That's a juicy yield. And they've actually got, I think they're net cash now, and they actually said in their update yesterday they expect to have cash at year end. Now, obviously, house builders, they can't really justify high PE. I mean, quite often you see house builders on a PE of 8 or so. That's quite normal. But I think, you know, there's a fair chance of some upside if you get a re-rating, and maybe it could be on a forward PE of 12. Well, if it goes from forecast 2-year forecast PE of 8 and goes to 12, there's 50% upside straight away. And with the if you get the uplift in earnings per share as well, you know, there's potential for this to make quite a little nice little bit of gain, and you're picking up a damn juicy dividend along the way. Obviously, it's very cyclical, and you know, if the economy was to go into recession again, they'd probably struggle. But I don't think that's very likely. I think we're at that part of the cycle. We're coming out of recession. We're not going into a recession. So I think we've got a little while yet where things will tick over all right.
I won't agree with you, Pete, but I'm going to have to caveat that a little bit. I think the danger is, I don't want to say it's got a bit hot, but I think the next 3 months are going to be quite important regarding how markets, the economy, etc., etc., do. And, you know, I'm planning this event, and I've been planning this event, you know, and organising it and trying to put it together very, very quickly, and trying to do it in the middle of September next week, Friday, purely because I think there's a real risk that Boris does another bloody U-turn. You know what I mean? And we could be in lockdown in October, November or December of this year. And if that happens, mate, the house builders and everybody else that's been really punching above their weight and doing phenomenally well, they get crimped again, Pete, because we're locked down and we can't travel here. We can't do that. And I know I'm being a bit of a doommonger, but it's like I'm just watching what happens everywhere else and what's going on and looking at the numbers. And no one's talking about the risks, what Phil and John were talking about. There's risks here, Pete, that things get hit again because something else happens that we're not looking for. We've got to look at what could go wrong in our rosy outlooks, you know?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I think, you know, we have the discussion with John and Phil that, you know, tech valuations again, the Brit meaty and the crypto world's gone nuts and all the other stuff that's going on. And I've said on several recent podcasts, I've said it a lot on Twitter, and I've written about it on my website, that, you know, I'm cautious at the moment because September, October can be a really difficult period for markets. I'm about 5% cash at the moment, and I'm also probably about, I've got a FTSE 100 short as a hedge, and that's probably equivalent to about 12% or something like that of my portfolio. And interestingly, after what's been happening in the last few days, I'm now looking at the FTSE 100 and chart and looking what's going on. And I'm thinking, do you know, it wouldn't surprise me if I'm going to be adding to that hedge soon. So, you know, I'm already thinking about, you know, I'm not buying anything at the moment. I'm just, there is one stock I've got my eye on that I already hold, and I wouldn't mind having more of that. And I'm sort of looking at that one. Looking for the technical signals to see if it breaks upwards, and then I might buy more. But in general, I'm just really cautious at the moment. I just want to sort of hedge my portfolio and be ready for any drops. And as you say, yes, there is a risk that we could have another lockdown. Although I think one of the lessons that came out of the previous lockdowns is people are now starting to understand what stocks do well and what stocks don't do well during a lockdown. So I'm not sure if it would be quite as painful as it was. Well, I don't think it'd be anything like March 2020. I think in March 2020, everyone just got rid of every stock they had because everyone just wet themselves, didn't they, and panicked, yeah? Whereas I think this time people will be more discerning.
I think you're right. I think, I mean, we've all been surprised at who the winners were. you know, the Alfreds of the world. I would never have looked at that. Pets at Home wouldn't have looked at that and thought they're going to win, you know. And a lot of people have been surprised, and a lot of stocks have done extremely well because of the pandemic situation and the lockdown. And some of them have then suffered because we're seeming to be coming out, you know. So they might do well if we go back into some sort of lockdown. But it's going to be very, very interesting. The thing I've mentioned before on this podcast and what I'm watching is the FTSE All Share level, right? So all of the FTSE All Share, and my figure has been the line in the sand of 4,000, okay? And it's been up. I think the high that we had was going back to early part of this month, actually. Early part of last month, sorry. Around 4143 or thereabouts.
Yeah.
4144 in early August, mid-August, sorry. And we're sitting at 4089 at the minute. And if it gets to 4,000, that's telling me that people are getting a bit worried. But, you know, we'll have to see how that goes. It's been ebbing and flowing for the last couple of weeks. So we'll have to watch that. I think the other stock I want to talk about, Pete, because we're all talking about private equity coming in and buying this and buying that and doing this and the other. But yeah, we don't necessarily talk that much about our own UK private equity companies very often. Yeah?
Yeah.
And one of the companies that caught my eye, and I wish it caught my eye earlier, is a private equity company that everybody knows about, but no one talks about, right?
Yeah.
HG Capital Trust, Pete.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
We'll see it. What's the TIDA?
HGT.
Oh, yeah.
And they came out with really, really good first half performance numbers I'm lost the track of days now. Monday. So they've produced a net asset value return of 21.4% for the first half to June, beating the FTSE All Share by 11%. And they've got their net assets reaching a record 1.6 billion, Pete. And it's one of those slow, methodical, compounding stocks. And I've read something somewhere, I can't remember where, that £1,000 invested in HD Trust 20 years ago, just people buying, and like Phil and John said, buying and forgetting, 20 years, £1,000, sitting there, forget about it, producing £15,000, £794, for a total return of 1,479%. It's not bad, is it, for doing nothing?
Like you said, as a, you know, for a point, what is it, set and forget kind of investment?
Set and forget, yeah, set and forget, leave it alone, it does what it does. You know, it buys things, it does it up, it spins them off, it floats them, blah, blah, blah. They're in the, you know, it doesn't get talked about, mate. I'd like one stock to return 1,400% for me, thank you very much, without me doing nothing.
Yeah, do you know what? I'm just looking at the chart now, and it's quite an interesting chart in that it's over 3 months, yeah, it's sort of moved up for say 1.5 months, 6 weeks, and then it's been going sideways for 6 weeks. And it's all about whether it breaks upwards out of that sideways range or whether it breaks downwards. And when you look at the bigger picture and you look at, say, a 1 year chart or a 3 year chart, it really looks, if you imagine like an uptrend channel, it really looks like it's at the top of the channel. So if markets are going to come off a bit, it may pull back a bit just to get itself more into line. I don't know.
That's okay.
Like I say, it's about where it breaks out, yeah, if it breaks out, whatever. Yeah.
Okay. Give us a couple of your stocks then, Pete. Let's hear you. I'm going to try and cut this one short now because we've been
two hours.
So give us a couple.
Yeah, I'll just bung in sort of one or two that I've got that are sort of related. Before I do that, can I just do a quick shout out to a guy called Monty Hedge? I'm sure he'll be listening. He put a comment on ADVFN bulletin board, on one of the bulletin boards, and it just said, "Excellent podcast, guys, that you did." And I was like, "Thanks, mate, that's fantastic." So shout out to him, brilliant. I've got one for you here, Pete. Me and you spoke about this recently, I think, you know, between ourselves. And we talked about how, you know, the whole, it's like the government and all of the governments and Extinction Rebellion and all of them, yeah, they're all on about climate change and all the rest of it. And the thing is, it's like all their, you know, they talk about cutting emissions and stuff, but it's pretty obvious that they're not cutting emissions very fast, right? So say, for instance, right, say that all of the governments in the world, and bear in mind you've got to include China, Russia, India in this, you know, all of the governments in the world, if everybody stopped emitting carbon next week, yeah, then we could probably maintain temperature levels in the world where they are today, right? That ain't going to happen. The simple reality is, you know, the cutting of emissions is really slow. So what that's saying is that already with the temperature of the world as it is today, we are seeing floods, hurricanes, I don't know, every you know, droughts, every kind of environmental problem you can have. So the simple fact is, whatever they're doing on the green policies, the planet's going to keep warming up most likely because they're still pumping out loads of crud. You know, that's the reality. So I was thinking, well, what stocks would benefit from that? And one that really hit me, apart from another one that I already own, one that I don't own that really hit me that I thought could really be a beneficiary of a continually warming planet is Alumask, I think it's called, yeah? A-L-U? I think that's what it's called, isn't it? Is that right?
Yeah. Alumask, yeah.
Yeah, so they do sort of like aluminium stuff and whatever, but like they do like drainage pipes and just all sorts of products and things that are all about, you know, dealing with the effects of too much rainfall and God knows what else. And I think that could be a really interesting play on a sort of warming up toasty world. And looking on SharePad now, it's on a forecast PE of 10.8. And then a 2-year forecast PE of 10.5. Now, that implies that the earnings aren't going to grow very fast, which I find a little bit surprising. And it's got a forecast yield of 3.5% and a forecast 2-year yield of 4.1. And it appears to have not very much debt at all. So it sounds like the balance sheet is pretty damn good on it, which is always something you want. And I just think that could be a really nice play.
It's an interesting company, mate. Essentially supplying building products, systems and solutions. I think the interesting bit that I like about it, having just looked at it, and I've looked at it before historically, because everyone's talking about the next big thing and what you need to be looking at, and that's the water management side of it, Pete. You know, yeah. You're talking about ESG. You really need to be thinking about the water, you know, the water solutions bit of it regarding companies going forward, you know, where everywhere is a growing population and all the rest of it. That going forward they might be looking at how they changed how they manage the top of the buildings, which is, you know, if we're going from the foundations with the water side of it, managing the water around it, but on the roofs, Pete, they're trying to make the roofs now green and, you know, economical that way, in a sense of, you know, climate change, you know, green on the top of the buildings going forward.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just so my sort of theme there was that everyone thinks of playing the green thing by having a wind turbine company or having a solar power company or electric cars, whatever. Well, the other way of playing it is to go for these sort of things that are solving problems. Now, I already own Water Intelligence, WATR.
Yeah,
and I've made that's been an absolutely brilliant investment for me, but would I buy it now? I probably wouldn't. I hold it. I probably wouldn't be buying it. Another company that's sort of in the same vein is CRH, which is another building products company. That might, I don't know, I haven't looked at it closely or whatever, but that might be one to think about. And then another thing that's a bit of a random one that's linked to it, I think it's RTO, Rentokil Initial, is that right?
Yeah, Rentokil, yeah.
mate, pest control. You think, right, the world gets warmer, there's going to be blinking rats everywhere nibbling your backside, and, you know, there's going to be, you're going to walk in your front door, there's insects everywhere. I mean, it's going to be bloody awful.
You're right. That share's done actually quite well, mate. And it's, again, one that no one really talks about because it's deemed as boring, and they do the basic sort of stuff. But as you fully well know, a lot of buildings were empty, weren't they, during lockdown? So they had a roaring trade, Pete. Going back to Alu Mask, the only issue I've got with it at the minute is that in the last 12 months, it's gone up 200% already, Pete. But Rentokil, definitely. Wow. I think that's a quality company, mate. And this is, again, going back to, we can know so much, but actually know so little. Because it's all hindsight stuff now, Pete. You know, you're looking back at March and April of last year when, you know, the vast majority of us were selling this and selling that and going, what's going on here? It's just, this is madness. It's carnage. We weren't looking at this thinking, you know what? That's deep value now. I need to buy that. I'm not looking at what anyone else is doing. And I did that a few times, but not barely enough, mate. And I'm looking at stocks now that's gone up threefold, fivefold since March or April of last year. And I see people coming out now buying it whilst it's up 200-300%. I'm going, I can't buy it now. I simply cannot buy it now. I'll wait a little while longer.
See, that's interesting.
But invariably, they go even higher. We spoke about Pets. We spoke about Alfreds. They went higher, Pete. B&Q, Kingfisher, went higher. You know, they've gone higher 30, 40, 60, 70% since we've spoken about them, since they bounced, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, I look at things a bit differently. I mean, for me, I'm very much into separating price from value. Now, when I look at, I'm not really bothered about what it's done before. To be honest, for me personally, that's like totally irrelevant, right? It just doesn't bother me.
We have
what
to disagree.
I'm interested in, mate.
We have to disagree. I'm very pro on not chasing stock that have been ripped higher by momentum. I'm just not. I can't tolerate it.
Well,
I'm not going to buy
me
a stock that was £3, Pete, 3 months ago, and it's now £23. Not buying it.
Well, for me, it's all about, what is the business doing? Is the market for the business likely to be very good? Is the management good? Blah, blah, blah. And what does the valuation look? I separate price very much from value. And for my mind, I look at Alu Mask on a 4 PE of 10.3 or whatever it is. I think that looks blinking good value.
I'm
and
not
I think
putting Alu Mask in that criteria. I'm just saying there's other stocks there that have been ripped higher for a variety of different reasons, whether it be a liquid or all the momentum people, or it's been tipped by numerous people. Everyone's talking about it and it's been ripped higher. For them just to come out and say, actually, we've slowed down a little bit and the share price halves, it's not going to be in my portfolio, Pete. I'd rather buy the stock that's undervalued, off the radar, not talked about by anybody, and it's slowly going about its business. And then when it gets on the radar of some people, fine. But I'm not buying something that everyone else is already talking about and already up three or four or fivefold from its lows. Alu Mask is a quality company, Pete. I'm with you on the metrics, and I'm with you regarding the segment that they're in. And they could go higher and higher and higher, mate. You know, and they're a quality company. They have been forever. You know what I mean? And they go through, because of all the different niches that they're in, when one sector is not doing so well, the other one balances it out. So they're a strong company, mate.
No, that's exactly it. And it's interesting what you said, because like I'm in, you know, Water Intelligence, WATR. Now, I would say I wouldn't buy it today because I'm holding it. I wouldn't buy it today because it's on like a forward PE of 40 or something. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. You know, I would not be buying it now. I'm happy to hold it at that kind of level. And I've actually been, you know, I have trimmed some fairly recently, but I wouldn't buy it. But that's because I'm looking at the value side. I'm looking at the price and I'm thinking, well, the two just don't match up. You know, it's just run ahead of itself or whatever. But I'm happy to run with it, you know, but I've reduced the size of my hold in.
Cool. Right, Pete, we've just done another hour on this second part. Is there anything you want to add regarding anything?
No, I think we're pretty much there. I think, you know, mate, you played a blinder on me there, because getting John Heumann and Phil Oakley, because I didn't know they were coming on, and just throwing them at me was fantastic. And as I said, I've read their stuff for years and I love what they write, and you know, it's fantastic that they're coming back on the scene and they're doing stuff. So great, yeah, good.
Yeah, I mean, part of the reason why I kept it quite low, Pro, was because I know how much you value their insights and education and all the rest of it historically, and I know how high of an esteem you all hold them in. So I wanted it to be almost a little treat for you, Pete. You know what I mean?
But certainly, it was lovely. Yeah, it's absolutely, because, you know, I just, Yeah, and like I say, I'm going to have a beer with them soon. That'll be good.
Absolutely. I mean, it's not, you know, from where you're part of the country, mate. It's not that far for you to get to them. Either of them, actually. You know, it's just a case of, especially if the weather's good in your car, mate, you could be up the road in no time. You know.
No, that's all good. Right, better not get on the head then, mate.
Yeah, I'm just going to do one last thing, Pete, before we rock and roll. And it's just to give I need to give a second shout out, really, to Lemming Investor, who's helped me absolutely enormously, and Liam Deasy at Memphis, who's helped me enormously put this event together on the 17th of September. And I just want to say to everybody, it's going to be an absolutely phenomenal night. So please, please, please try and make your way to the Leicester event on the 17th of September. We've got accommodation organised so you can get a discount at the Holiday Inn in Wigston in Leicester. And just make your way to the Eventbrite page for the event. And it's under the title of Resilience in Business, Sports and Life. There's going to be lots of investing insights in there, lots of life lessons in there. We've got a World Cup rugby winner, going to be sharing some insights. We've got some other special guests, which are going to keep secret. We've got booze, food, raffle prizes, and lots of gifts to be had from all the different sponsors. That it's going to be just be awesome. So please sign up and let me know, and contact me via Twitter as well once you've signed up, and we'll see what goes on from there. But at the moment, we're inching towards 10K, £10,000 raised for the Twin Peaks challenge. All monies from the event and everything on the Just Giving page goes to Memphis. And the whole goal of this for me is that you as listeners and people that have donated to this effort and support the event, we're going to be able to buy something substantial for the Memphis charity, and we'll be able to put something within the hub that support disabled young people, children, their families, etc., that we can put in there that can be used for years and years and years going forward and make a substantial difference to young people. This is just me trying to help an organisation and pay it forward back to people that are vulnerable and need it the most going forward. So I really, really appreciate all your support and kindness that you've shown so far. Thank you ever so much. You can make a donation on the Twin Peaks Challenge Just Giving page, which is justgiving.com/fundraising/ Twin Peaks Challenge. Thank you. Pete?
No, that's fantastic. Can I just ask you one thing, mate? Can you just specify the website address they have to go to book up for the Eventbrite thing? Because it wasn't that clear to me when you said it.
The website is Eventbrite. And yeah. The Eventbrite URL is eventbrite.co.uk/e/resilience-in-business-sport-life. You get your tickets there. But if you search it on the Eventbrite page and just look up Resilience in Business and Sport and Life by Memphis, you'll find it. I'll be putting it all over Twitter over the next few days. It's on the 17th of September, which is a week away on Friday. You're going to have to be quick to get your place booked in, and we'll take it from there. And I look forward to speaking to you guys. I might be trying to, depending how it goes and how shattered I am, because I'm absolutely knackered as I am now, I may be looking to organise a little something on the night, depending how I feel, for a meetup on the Saturday morning. So when people have had the breakfast, we might be meeting up at said hotel for a little catch up and a meet up and a little chat about all things investing. So that might be a possibility as well. But yeah, just get in touch with Pete or I via Twitter, sign up, and contact Lemming Investor as well. And we'll see how it goes from there. We've got two companies that are in a very innovative space in the pharma space, Open Orphan, and Poolbeg Pharma, and lots of other stuff going on. So just get in touch.
It'd be good. It'd be a good event.
All right, ladies and gents, thank you ever so much once again for your support. Thank you for listening to part two of this absolute marathon that we've done. I'm really, really pleased to have got John Newman and Phil Oakley on here. And I hope you guys are ever so pleased too. We look forward to hearing your feedback. And please, please, please have a look at the new website, Investability, from John Newman and Phil Oakley. That's it from me. I'm going to go and have some Scooby snacks now. It's now.
Bye.
Bye. Working since about 6:30 this morning. So I will let you guys go and look forward to hearing all your feedback. Take care. God bless. Stay safe. Do whatever you can in the community to help others. Keep paying it forward, people.
This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with ShareePad from ShareScoop, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScoop.co.uk and discover the advantage.